Hi, this is Terry Griffith from Bark Radio. I wanted to add a point of clarification before you listen to the next episode, in which we discuss electronic in-ground fences that work on radio frequency. During the episode, we use the term invisible fence throughout it for two reasons. One, it's the product we've both worked with. And two, it's sort of a generic term for radio frequency fences anymore, sort of like Kleenex is for nose tissues. Keep in mind that the training that you need to do with your dog and the effort that you need to put into making these tools work properly is true regardless of the manufacturer. Every radio frequency in-ground fence works very similar, and there are things that you can do right and things that you can do wrong. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we share our experiences where they've been used in both ways, right and wrong, and how to prevent issues that may ruin your dog in the long term by using them wrong. So keep that in mind. It is a generic term. We'll talk to you guys later. See ya. Hello, I'm Terry Griffith, and I'm here with my co-host Dee Boghetti, and we're Bark Radio.
Welcome, folks. So what do we got on the agenda today, Terry?
Well, we are going to talk about invisible fences.
Ooh.
I know.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, and there's all of those. So we were talking earlier, and Dee was sharing a story of an ugly and a bad kind of together in a situation with an invisible fence. And I've used invisible fences before. And I'm always cautious because you want to make sure it fits the appropriate. It's appropriate to that particular dog, not just the breed, but the individual dog, because every dog reacts differently. And so we decided that they'd make for a good episode because she had some good stories around what was bad. Mm-hmm. I have both good and bad stories, so we wanted to make sure that our folks got informed.
Yeah. Invisible fences, I think, are becoming more and more popular in new subdivisions, at least on the East Coast, where there are heavy-duty restrictions about putting regular fencing up, about the height of the fence, that sort of thing. So folks are more and more turning to invisible fencing, not only outdoors, but in their homes. Okay, so what I ran across very recently has always been one of my fears. There are dogs who are soft dogs, which means this is a dog who can get her feelings hurt really easily. She may have a tendency to be a little bit shy, maybe a little fearful. And this particular dog's a golden retriever, and she's 11 months old, and her family has invisible fencing indoors and out, and she's never had any structured obedience training, so I'm doing some private consults with them. And the first visit, I saw some unusual behavior from her, because this is inside her own home where dogs are usually the most comfortable. And when I started doing some recall exercises with the dog, as in come when called, I saw that she would not go in a specific direction in this big room. I didn't know what was going on at the time. Even with a leash on, she could not be convinced that it was okay to go that direction. Well, it turns out that there is invisible fencing in that room in a doorway, a big wide open doorway, and she was probably 10 feet back from that, but she still would not go anywhere near it. What I'm afraid of is she's gotten zapped enough that it's developing at least a little bit of a fear issue in her.
Okay.
And that, it's horrible for a dog to be afraid of anything, and ultimately it can turn into lots of other negative stuff within the family. So just kind of think twice and three times about your situation, your dog, before you choose invisible fencing. Terry, you've got a story.
I got lots of stories, but...
Oh, and you're going to hear them all,
yeah.
Folks. Just give it time.
And we just had the dogs join us. And in case you haven't, if you're a first-time listener, we often have our dogs in and out and wandering around. And
so if you hear panting, it's not Terry.
Yeah, it's not me. It's the dogs. And occasionally the mics go flying or equipment gets knocked over. But that's all right. It's all part of us, and we love them to death, so we're going to deal with them.
Absolutely.
So yeah, the invisible fence stuff, it takes some education on the owner's behalf. And some of what I've learned is through reading and understanding electronics, and other parts of it is through
mistakes, unfortunately. So the theory of the invisible fence, we'll get a little technical here for a second. Theory of the invisible fence is it's just a radio frequency. It's an AM radio frequency that's being transmitted through this wire that goes around your yard, and the collars that the dogs wear respond to that. And depending on the strength of the frequency, depends on whether it's just a chirping sound they hear or if they actually get a zap. And most of the collars will do both.
Oh, okay.
There's also ways that you can do training where you cover the prongs on the collar with these rubber things.
Mm-hmm.
So during the training exercise, all they ever do is hear the noise. You don't they don't actually get the zap.
Right.
What I've seen failures of the owners is that they don't work properly with the dog, so the dog doesn't know where the line is. There's a whole process and education thing for the dog. It's just like training standard obedience. You have to work with flags, and you do a whole exercise around getting this trained.
So you're training the boundary.
Training the boundary, correct. The other thing that people don't often realize is the collars are adjustable. And they're adjustable in a couple of different ways. The amount of shock that they get, how long the chirp goes off before the shocks, and the size of the prong. So a dog with thick hair or a very tough neck will have a higher voltage, longer prong.
All right, so if there's this audible thing that mm-hmm. happens, if the dog moves away from the fence, the invisible fence, does that mean they will not get shocked?
Correct.
Okay.
If they respond to the chirp, they don't get a shock.
Okay.
And you can do that. You can train the dog to not ever see the shock. They don't have to have it. They hear the chirp, you have your flag set up, and you go through the proper training exercises. The shock doesn't have to happen.
Okay.
And I've seen dogs that are trained very well, and they've never experienced it. I know some people that use the rubber things on the collars all the time. They're just using it for the noise.
Well, that's awesome, man, because if that noise works, that's a great deterrent. And you're not going to inadvertently overzap your dog.
Correct. Now, the problem with that is it puts a lot of responsibility on the owners to work with the dog, because it takes several hours worth of training and continual reinforcement of what those boundaries are and what that sound means. Some people are lazy.
Right.
They're not going to go and do that.
And some people, they're also invisible. There's also invisible fencing you can put in yourself where it doesn't come with a human, for example, who's going to train you to use it properly. Because I know a lot of the companies are doing that these days. They actually have a rep who will train the family to use the invisible fencing
properly.
Or at
least a DVD of how to train the dog,
right.
Not just how to install the product. But people, again, a DVD throws it aside, I don't need this, put the collar on the dog, let it run. It'll figure it out. Well, that's stupid. And you can't fix stupid.
Here, here.
Yeah. So some of the other technical pieces of this to remember is weather conditions affect how far that signal travels.
See, now I did not know that.
Right. So if the ground is very wet, the signal spreads much farther across the ground than if it's very dry.
Wow.
And I had a really bad experience with, well, it could have been much worse, but it was bad enough. It bothered me a lot, still bothers me today. With our previous cattle dog, Aussie, who was trained on invisible fence.
Mm-hmm. And it worked well.
And it worked well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, evaluate it by breed and individual
right.
dog. It worked well for her. Now, I had, at this time, we had a relatively small lot. It wasn't, it was maybe a half acre
mm-hmm.
Total lot. And it just ran around the perimeter. We didn't have it indoors or anything.
Right.
I don't believe in the indoor electrical piece. It's an outdoor fencing in my mind. It had been very rainy for that week. And I let her in from the outside. I forgot to take the collar off. And
Ooh.
We went to bed. So at some point during the night, and I don't know what triggered it, because cattle dogs aren't big barkers. I mean, they will bark, but they don't, they don't do it as much. The spider senses went off, and I got up, said something's not right. Where's the dog? Well, the dog was under the bed, and I couldn't figure out why. And I reached under there to see what was going on. Grabbed hold of that collar. The collar was going off in the house.
Oh my God.
Jumped backwards, proceeded to swear, not at the dog, but because of the fact that, one, I left the collar on, and two, the thing was going off in the house when it shouldn't be.
Did it zap you?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. It gave me a heck of a poke.
Wow.
Some, and we had it on the low setting for her.
Oh, man.
And it was still a heck of a poke. It startled me. What she had done is she crawled under the bed, so it wasn't poking her, but she had tilted it in such a way, so it was, how do I describe this? Can you see my hands move?
I can, and it's not helping.
I'm a visual talker here. If you think of it as a little box under their neck, she had pushed down and tilted the prongs out so it wasn't touching her. The collar was still going off.
Wow.
But she was holding her head up and away from her, so she was there and stuck, because if she moved, it was poking her.
Oh, poor thing.
So we got that off. I proceeded to, again, curse not only the product but myself for leaving it on her.
Apologized profusely,
To the dog. We were very lucky. It did not have a negative effect on her. But it could very easily have traumatized her going through that event.
Again, it depends on the dog. If you have that soft dog and that happens to them, oh man, you may have just ruined that dog for life.
Yeah.
So you were very, very lucky. And I appreciate the more technical view of these fences, because I'm not an engineer. I'm a creative man. I don't know from anything about voltage. But I think the piece of information about the weather impacting them is really important for people to know. And just like electronic training calendars.
You can make pasta and train the dog.
I'm picturing Murphy in a colander. Oh my gosh. Electronic training collars. Said calendars. We're getting toward the end here.
It's been a long day. Yeah.
Right. If used improperly, they can really hurt a dog.
Absolutely.
If not ruin a dog.
Absolutely. And well, with Surrey, I mean, we've had Surrey now about 15 months or so, and we debated. So we have, in our yard now, we have the invisible fence installed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Aussie lived here, you know, half of her life, and, right. And it was fine.
It was there.
It mm-hmm. was there, and we used it. And we decided, after much debate and observing the dog, that with Surrey, that it probably would be bad. It was not going to be the right fit for her. It's you know, still in the ground. The box is disabled. I've unplugged it and whatever. But you got to be careful, because every dog is different.
That's key, people. You have to learn to read your own dog on so many levels for so many reasons. You're going to learn from their physical behavior how they feel, what they need. And you also, if you pay attention, you can determine if your own dog is a dog who might have a tendency toward fear issues. And if you have that dog, probably don't want to do an invisible fence. Probably would never do an electronic training collar. There are dogs who, like my Cody, who's 8 years old, wired for sound from the day she was born. She came from hunting stock and field trial stock. This is one tough 70-pound Labrador Retriever. So when I had her in Wilderness Search and Rescue, it wasn't very popular with my teammates, but I did use an electronic training collar on her. Why? Because my dog had to work off-leash in a huge area. And she had to, when she was young, learn recall that was absolutely bulletproof. She had to come to me no matter what. And I used it on her probably not when she was a young, really young dog. I don't believe in that. Probably started using it on her when she was about 11 months. And only used it for probably 6 months. And most of the time, it was just on her. I didn't do a thing. But just being on her, she knew, Mom's got a little more control than normal. And she would push the envelope, man. The first time I ever used it on her, I lived in a rural area at the time. When we went out the gate, out of the backyard, we were in the middle of 60 acres, and 20 of it was a hayfield, and the rest was, we were surrounded by woods. That dog would head for the woods, and all you could see was her butt. And it's like, you could call her, and her little ear flaps were closed. She just completely ignored me. So we got out the electronic training collar, talked to my breeder about it, and used the one that he used, and had great success with it. But I knew how to use it. I was trained on how to use it. I did watch the DVD. I did talk to someone who used it on a regular basis for training dogs, and it was very effective.
I can see there's times and places for that. I think the key, and you brought this up, that you, because you did it, was that you got... You got educated.
Mm-hmm.
You watched the video. You talked to people that knew what the heck was going on. And I have to kind of go sideways with this for just a second, because I saw people using those training collars incorrectly at an event last year, and I was just pissed. That beautiful, beautiful shepherd dog, puppy, maybe 11, 12 months.
Getting zapped
because this
jackass.
Dumbass didn't have a clue on how to work that collar or that dog, and that poor dog was going to end up fearful, mm-hmm. and maybe even aggressive from it towards mm-hmm. the owner, because it was always associating that pain with this dummy.
Oh my lord, that is just so sad.
I was pissed.
Yeah, and again, you can't fix stupid, and people ruin dogs every day in this world. Don't be one of them.
Yeah, it's not that hard to get. To get the right answers, educate yourself so that you make sure that the dog gets the very best it can, and you get the very best dog because you put some effort into it.
And, as we're going to end this segment, I'm going to say what I want to say to everyone in the entire world. I am a dog trainer. I believe that every dog and his or her owner should at least have one obedience class or some privates with a trainer in their lives together. It's so important, and all it does is help the bond between the two of you and makes you able to take your dog out in public. Because, man, you start working on those great obedience skills. The dog's loving to learn. You're having a good time one-on-one. It's just a win-win. So go to a class. Get a trainer. It's all good.
It is all good. And I do want to do one standard disclaimer here. So I've used the term invisible fence. And when I'm talking about that, I'm not talking about one particular manufacturer. It's all of the electronic inline fencings that you bury and they have a radio frequency collar. They all have the same types of principles behind it. They all have the same types of ideas on how you can adjust things and train with them. Very similar. Invisible Fence is just certainly the most well-known, I believe, probably mm-hmm. one of the oldest.
Yep.
It is the product that I used, but again, it's the same across the board. Whether you're buying XYZ or PDQ, it's the same problems, the same potential training issues. All right, I think that's it for this episode. Let's take our dogs out and go play.
It's time.
All righty.